Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We strive to be welcoming to all, though we recognize that we all have biases that limit our understanding of how others may perceive us and how we may perceive others. We stumble in our efforts, but we commit to keep trying to grow our ability to love people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender identity, family structure, age, or abilities. And my pronouns are she, oh, thanks. My pronouns are she and her. So we will start off with a prelude, which was which is the overture by Bruins, and it is pre-recorded by Amber. That was beautiful. Thank you. We do have a few announcements, and you can see your paper order of service for more details, or if you're on the email list, you can get it that way too. Curious about Prairie UU? Join Reverend Matt Disa Pence and Patty Stockdale after today's service to learn more about Prairie's UU Society. We will share information about our church, congregation, in a friendly exchange and conversation. Meet us in the foyer near the welcoming table by 11:30 a.m. and walk over to the annex next door. We won't keep you long and we will respect your time so you can get on with your busy day. Also, after today's service, there is a Q&A for items that will be discussed at the Spring Parish meeting next Sunday on May 22nd. Please move towards the front in the meeting room after the service ends. Prairie Spring Parish meeting will be held on Sunday, May 22nd at 10 a.m. We will be starting the day with a short service and then moving into the meeting. We'll be selecting the board and nominating committee members along with other business. Spiritual Exploration Group will meet every 2 weeks on a drop-in basis with rotating discussion leaders. No preparation or reading is required. It will be an opportunity to quiet our minds, share what's going on in our hearts, experience presence together, and deepen our sense of community. The next meeting will be on Thursday, May 5th at 1 p.m. Please join us. Our opening music is Turn the World Around, words by Music Harry Belafonte, performed by the Prairie Choir. Thank you.
light turn the world around. Heart is of the river, body is the mountain, spirit is the sunlight, turn the world around. We are of the spirit, truly of the spirit, only can the spirit turn the world around.
Thank you. That was beautiful. Now we will have the chalice lighting, and by this is by Alamani Erceed from Octavia Butler's "The Parable of the Sow," reading by Barbara.
All that you touch, you change. All that you change changes you. The only lasting truth is change.
I haven't done it before, Nick. All right. Okay. Today's story for all ages is Unplugged by Steve Anthony, and it will be read by Alice.
All right, so today's story is called Unplugged. Hello, Blip. Blip liked being plugged into her computer, on her computer. Blip learned new things, played fun games, danced to music, and visited faraway places all day long. But one day, there was a blackout, and Blip tripped over her wire. She tumbled all the way downstairs and out the front door. Blip toppled down a steep, grassy hill, rolled through a forest of very tall trees, and drifted down a long, winding river. Blip was outside. Outside, Blip learned new things, played fun games, danced to music, and visited faraway places. All day long. But it was getting late. Blip sailed back up the long winding river and walked back through the forest of very tall trees and climbed back up the steep grassy hill, where she said goodbye to her new friends. Blip walked all the way upstairs and plugged back into her computer. Blip liked being plugged into her computer, but all she could think about was how great it was to be unplugged.
And Now we will have a moment of silent meditation. Our reading today will be What is a Unitarian Universalist? And it will be read by Ron Fry.
A Unitarian Universalist is someone who subscribes to the Unitarian belief system, which espouses the view that there is one ultimate truth, but that this truth can be expressed in many different ways. Unitarians believe that love is the highest ideal, and they strive to live their lives in accordance with this principle. They believe that love can take many different forms, from the love that we have for our families and friends to the compassion and empathy we feel toward others in need. Unitarian Universalists are committed to promoting love and understanding in their communities, both on an individual level and through organizations like Unitarian churches and community groups. Whether you're seeking a spiritual path that emphasizes love and compassion, or you're looking for a community of like-minded individuals to connect with, Unitarian Universalists may be right for you.
And that was a reading by Jasper AI, Jasper Artificial Intelligence. So, Reverend Matt Aspen, his pronouns are he, him, and his, is our full-time contract minister for this church this year. His presentation today is entitled Real Thoughts About Artificial Intelligence and relates to our fourth UU principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning.
Good morning, everyone. It's good to be with you here in this beginning of the winter-summer season here in Wisconsin, as opposed to last week, which was the winter-spring season. So I'm catching up. I'm finding my way around my new part of the world I live in here. A few months back, I had the bright idea to offer a pick the sermon topic as an auction item, which Sonia enthusiastically bid on. Her hand shot up and she kept raising and raising. I was like, she's got something to ask. We set a time to meet to discuss, as of course I wanted to hear not only the topic that she wanted, but also her thoughts on it and what she already knew and why it was important to her. And not long after we got together, she revealed the source of her current theological wrestlings. And she said, I'd like to hear your thoughts and the UU take on artificial intelligence. And I recall being thrown instantly into a bit of a panic as my mind started racing with questions. What in the world do I know about artificial intelligence? How is that even related to church? And how much will this congregation care about artificial intelligence? So that's what my boring brain initially thought. Thankfully, my boring brain is often wrong, and I try not to spend too much time listening to it. Because it wasn't long before it occurred to me that this may be one of the most exciting topics I could have possibly been offered. Because thinking about what power we might cede, and then alternatively, what power we should perhaps never cede to a computer, forces us to really think about how we try to safely cede power to others in our existing systems. So this was fun for me, thank you. I don't think there's anything more important to be talking about today than that. Because it is an understatement to say that our computers are getting smarter really quickly. And quantum computing and nanotechnology is poised to ensure that Moore's Law, the observation that computer power available on a microchip has doubled every 2 years since 1975 will continue for at least the foreseeable future. I think about that. Doubling. It gets smarter every 2 years. Twice as smart. At the same time, the current balances of power in the world also seem to be shifting at a breakneck speed. And as we have learned repeatedly from history, many powerful technologies that are initially designed for good can very easily be utilized for bad, especially in turbulent times. One way or another, change gonna come. To give you a sense of what artificial intelligence even is, if you're not already aware, as was mentioned, our reading today was generated entirely by a computer program named Jasper in response to Sonia's simple query, what is a Unitarian Universalist? Kind of freaky, isn't it? That was pretty good. I couldn't have done any better than that. This is just one example that shows us the level to which artificial intelligence has already evolved. You'll be getting another glimpse of Jasper's brilliant work at the end of this service with the closing words. Jasper was designed to generate content for online bloggers, marketing campaigns, any space that benefits from generating a great deal of timely, relevant, believable content as efficiently as possible. But this is just one tiny example of thousands of applications currently in development where artificial intelligence is being leveraged to solve problems or in some way try to simplify things for us. And as you can see, the line between content generated by us and content generated by machines is already starting to blur pretty quickly. During my research for this talk, I also read about an enzyme that had been engineered using only artificial intelligence that, listen to this one, has the capacity to consume entire plastic containers, depolymerizing the dangerous PET chemicals, and converting them to fluids that can be used to make reusable batteries. I know, right? As this line of research continues, perhaps it will be this AI machine or another like it that creates the technology solution to the climate mess we've humaned ourselves into. Now, this computer did its work the exact same way Jasper did, by casting a wide net across the web of what is already known and cataloged, and then looking for patterns or opportunities of yet unexplored connections between things. It's basically our human tendency to notice patterns, ramped up by teraflops of data and high-speed, logic-based mining and reimagining. It already works really well, and it's getting better every day. Problems once thought to be unconquerable, like that plastics problem, are being solved in shorter and shorter periods of time. Which rightly, I think, gives lots of folks hope for the future. And it gives just as many a bit of pause. Because as Harvard biologist E.O. Wilson once put it, we have Paleolithic emotions, medieval institutions, and godlike technology. Now, I have to admit up front that some of these topics have already been explored pretty thoroughly in science fiction. Asimov, Bradbury, Wells, Clark, Roddenberry, many in this room are probably far better in this genre, read in this genre than me. Heck, Ray Bradbury was a Unitarian, if you didn't know that one. Yeah, well, see. Actually, an even better place to play with these ideas is an emerging genre called visionary fiction. Inspired by the groundbreaking black female science fiction writer Octavia Butler, whose words were in the opening here, this term was developed during a collaboration between authors and community organizers Walita Imarisha and Adrienne Marie Brown. Walita says, whenever we try to envision a world without war, without violence, without prisons, without capitalism, we are actually engaging in speculative fiction. Visionary fiction is a term they developed together to distinguish science fiction that has relevance towards building new, freer worlds from the mainstream strain of science fiction, which most often reinforces dominant narratives of power. Visionary fiction encompasses all of the fantastic, with the arc always bending towards justice. She says, once the imagination is unshackled, liberation is limitless. Adrienne Marie Brown describes the element of visionary fiction that make it so necessary for our times. She notes critically that, and this is, there's a lot to chew on in this next section. Visionary fiction explores current social issues through the lens of science fiction, is conscious of identities and intersecting identities, centers those that have been marginalized, is aware of power inequalities, is realistic and hard, but hopeful, shows change from the bottom up rather than from the top down, highlights that change is collective, and its purpose is social change and societal transformation. If you would like a great sample taste of this type of writing I'm talking about, I highly recommend the book Octavia's Brood, a collection that was created communally through a series of writing workshops based on the premise that if we want to create a world that works for more of us, we have to have more of us involved in the visioning process. I can almost guarantee, if you've not already explored this genre, you will definitely find your perspectives be challenged and ultimately expanded by taking the time to read some of that work. So, how does all of this inform how we, Unitarian Universalists, might evaluate, discern, advocate for, and protect against this tsunami of computing power that is infiltrating more and more of our daily lives, while at the same time becoming harder and harder to distinguish from human ingenuity? As I prepared for this talk, I spent a good deal of my time considering the most challenging of our natural human tendencies, and then began to consider how these tendencies would need to be intentionally corrected for in the logic and programming of any artificial intelligence application to ensure that it doesn't make the same mistakes that we have been unable to correct on our own to this point. Current attempts at AI-enhanced medical tools, for example, show clear errors when attempting to diagnose skin cancers in darker-skinned patients because the databases used to teach the machines have significantly more images of Caucasian skin. This leads to machines able to exceed the skill of a human doctor diagnosing skin cancer in Caucasian individuals, but perform significantly less well for nearly everyone else. The same bias was discovered several years ago in emerging facial recognition softwares, leading to all kinds of issues with security. If there is a message here, it is that it takes significant intentionality to ensure these computerized helpers don't simply amplify the current systemic imbalances that exist in technology access. I had so many fun places to think about. Thank you so much. This has been fun. I thought of things like the wisdom Spock shares with Captain Kirk in several places in the Star Trek franchise. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. I always thought that was just brilliant. And there's people that challenge that, but I thought about how in this society we still tend to prioritize our own perspective over a more holistic and expansive perspective generated collectively. And I know that to be true. I thought about how we place economic value on speed and beating the competition in the marketplace, which can always lead to shortcuts and myopic binary thinking. I believe the process to consider handing a task over to a computer is similar to the process we use in a community like this to continually ensure we are able to move forward safely together. Given that this is an enormous topic, and I only have enough time to skim the surface on a myriad of potential avenues, I decided to focus on the ways in which community like this strives to function. Because it is communities like this one that frequently contain the types of folks who are thought leaders in their fields. We have PhD researchers, we have computer scientists, we have all kinds of really smart people in this room. And it's where we strive to raise children equipped to someday do the same. So the processes by which we intentionally attempt to organize and manage ourselves become the mental maps we are able to contribute to those arenas whenever our people contribute their ideas into the workplace or in higher education or in the nonprofit sector. So, What can we learn here at church, at a church like this, that can help us to navigate the dizzying pace of change occurring in the technology spaces? The first place to always begin, and again, I'm sure this lines up well with software development processes, etc. But the first place always to begin is to constantly revisit the why question. If you've been hanging around here for the last couple of months, you know the board is beginning to encourage us to collectively re-examine the mission and vision of this community. Why do we gather? What outcomes are we actually trying to achieve by showing up here? And how will the world be better if we are in some way successful? These are the same questions that should always precede the development or use of any piece of technology. What is this thing we are considering building designed to actually do? And how well does it align with its intended outcomes? And what are the unintended consequences that we need to make sure that we are mindful of? A community like this is a great place to practice the skill of imagining a brighter future and then testing the mechanisms to see which actions seem to lead us closer to those outcomes we desire. Another set of lessons we can practice in a community like this has to do with collaboration and information sharing. What mechanisms do we put in place to ensure good information sharing and decision making? How do we make sure we are including as many perspectives as possible in our deliberations to increase our confidence that our decisions are as holistic as possible? How do we ensure that power does not all get siphoned back right to those who already have the most power in the first place? We don't think about this very often at all here, but how do we make sure our system does not become corrupted by individuals whose intentional goal is to breach our system and cause disruption to what we're trying to do? Each of these questions, and 100 more I thought of, is a topic worthy of its own sermon. Or better yet, always better yet. These types of topics are perfect for groups of people from this community discussing issues that contain some level of inherent tension, places where there might be really good, reasonable points on several sides of an issue. Individuals discussing together, publicly, their honest current perspective on things. Practicing together over and over and over how to really dissect these issues that impact humans and our shared environment, and emerge on the other side of the discussion with a great deal of confidence that our conclusions are valid, even if we continue to hold two or three or even a dozen acceptable alternatives for the time being. To know that we have truly done our best to include a myriad of perspectives in our deliberations, and that we emerge on the other side with our relationships still intact. We don't want to crash the system while we're doing this really heavy lifting. This is how we continually improve the codes that we use to organize our collective efforts. In this age of fake news, when confidence in our large religious, government, and business institutions is continuing to wane, the role of small communities like this, places that are still willing to engage in deep, committed relationships based on caring and reciprocity, are a part of the balancing force in the system that becomes more and more necessary as life becomes technologically more complex every day. And the good news is, I see these types of conversations happening all the time around this community, and they're happening more even now than when I started. These conversations are happening in our covenant group, members of which recently shared their appreciation for the depth of connections and explorations that have been happening in that space that they created. Be on the lookout for an invitation to convene a new covenant group based on interest already expressed by a few individuals that listened to that group's talk at the retreat. I've seen this process at work in the gathering of the humanist group that uses this building once a month. Folks that value intellectual debate and are willing to allow conflicting opinions to be expressed to ensure continued relevance to their ever-evolving individual conclusions. These types of conversations happened and continue to happen between the members of the Widening the Circle Task Force and your board, as we continue to evaluate the best ways to integrate their important insights into the very fabric of this community. I see it in the spirituality group that has been emerging, examining ways in which the members of this sometimes heady community might deepen and expand their capacities to navigate this part of our shared journey in new ways. I see it in the Dungeons and Dragons group that meets, led by our youth, a space that teaches radical welcoming. Everybody is always welcome to show up. You don't have to say you're coming. You don't have to have ever played the game. Show up. You will be taken care of. And they do a lot of collaborative problem solving in that group, too. I see it in the groups that walk together every week. I see it in the groups that sing together. I see it in dozens of spaces that exist in this community for the deepening of connection and relationship. Each week, we teach our children about interdependence. We expose them to ideas that appear to be in conflict and show them how to search for what is the truest within what is currently known, but to always continue to question their own assumptions and find even deeper meaning as foundation for their most important decisions. In short, our UU communities are designed to help form the type of people we would hope are tasked with considering the consequences of the machines that the human mind is capable of imagining and whose development is being amplified at a dizzying pace. Mission, vision, governance structure, democratic principles, policies, procedures, these form the framework and the software of our current human systems. These are the pieces of code that we use to help program our human communities to operate together as efficiently as possible for the outcomes that we desire in the future. Our Unitarian Universalist faith offers a framework upon which to build a better mousetrap. You can think of our principles and purposes as open source code that was collectively designed and made available to all to give us a base from which to try to approach our work. Then each congregation develops its own software to try to bring these higher ideals to life, both individually, for collectively, and for the larger community. Now, I know that Unitarian Universalism is but one program designed to reach the desired goal of our sixth principle, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all in the world. And I know that each system that humans design has its flaws. As humans, our main thing is to survive, just as it is with all living beings. Our success or failure depends on the programs we select to help us navigate the world. If there is one piece of our UU software that I believe creates the opportunity to lay claim that ours is at least worthy of continued testing, refining, and replication, it is our oft-repeated claim that revelation is not sealed. We profess to be aware of and are willing to explore our imperfections. It is this belief about our own infallibility that will hopefully keep us humble enough to recognize the limits of our individual perspectives. Will computers ever truly become smarter than humans? My uneducated guess would be not too soon. And I say this for a very simple reason. And that is that computers do not do well at all with ambiguity. A computer that identifies an answer that might be wrong has no choice but to eliminate that possibility as it continues to search for a more correct answer. Ambiguity leads to errors in the binary of computer code. It just doesn't compute. As a sentient species, I believe our next challenge is to evolve from a prioritization of self-preservation to collective salvation. My sense is that finding a way to make this shift before it's too late will be the most pressing need of the coming generations. The comforting news is that this software code was in place for tens of thousands of years, used by the first peoples of this land. I try to never forget that I am a member of a societal experiment that is only a few hundred years old at most. For all of our crowning achievements, we as a society here in America are just barely able to claim that we might be entering the beta phase of our development cycle. My hope is that we are able to apply the most important aspect of our chosen human software, the awareness that what we don't know will always be larger than what we do, and that we remain open to constantly consider new ways of being that will rapidly expand enough to avoid our tendencies towards self-importance and overconsumption. We are the source of both the potential and the peril in the computer systems we are building. May we become wise enough through our work together to recognize the differences and design our futures accordingly. Blessed be, and may it be so.
Thank you for that very, very accurate presentation. So you just, I will say one of my favorite pieces of advice from Jasper. I asked Jasper, how can I lose weight? And so I got all sorts of great advice about exercise and good nutrition and, you know, all the good things that we would expect. But the one that was my absolute favorite was, don't eat until after you've had a meal. So that just kind of sums up, you know, what we're trying to say about being a little bit incomplete. Yeah. So, all right. So now it is time for discussion around today's services. And so if you're comfortable, when you want to share, please come up to the front so the people on Zoom can see you. Is there anyone who would? Oh, yeah. If not, then we have a microphone for you as well. So would anyone like to share?
Hello, my name is Andy, he, him, his. I thought I'd talk a little bit about just the rawness of what supercomputers are. I think if we know a little bit more of what's on the ground, we can have more nuanced discussions. So currently for artificial intelligence, it's very good at learning a very narrow set of things. How to do breast cancer, but not do chess. Or how to do chess, but not be able to talk. The current thing they're trying to work on is a more generalized thing, where they can give it a problem and it can figure out on its own how to work it out. So that's kind of where we are with this. And so the things that worry me are how these are used in a police state, how they're used in war. So those are my fears.
Thanks, Andy. That's a very interesting comment. And what we don't know about what we don't know about how AI is working in the background can be a little bit scary, too. Is there anyone else who would like to share? Mary?
I'm Mary Mullen, she, hers. Well, what I always think about, when I first learned about using computers, you know, which is related to artificial intelligence, I guess, is that they're not like your parents. You know, they don't care, you know, to really teach you anything. They just insist that you do it their way. And that was my, you know, my epiphany about computers. So I had to get over being scared of wrecking them. That was another thing I had a fear of, or doing something wrong. Kids don't have that fear at all. And then just in response to about losing weight, what the computer said, I think what the key is that the computer didn't tell you, or that artificial intelligence didn't tell you, is you can just get interested in something else so you forget that you're hungry.
So I'm Kent, he, him, his. So I guess I was thinking about what Matt was saying, and for those of you who don't know, my career has been software development, although not really in the AI field. But I guess the thing that strikes me is I think the critical thing for AI is sort of the critical thing for a lot of other stuff, and that's going to be what are the incentives. And at this point in our society, the incentives are maximize the quarterly numbers, get the most retweets, maintain the power of those who are already in power. And, I think AI in and of itself can be used for good or for ill. And the critical thing in sort of determining that is going to be what the incentives are and who's kind of in control of the process. And I guess that makes me not like super optimistic about things, judging by the way things are going these days. So.
Evelyn Kane, she, her, hers. I'm reading a book, Clara and the Sun, by Katsuo Ishiguro. I haven't read the last 10 pages. Anyway, it's from the point of view of an artificial friend, an AF. And this is a time we don't know about where teenagers have AFs and other people have them. And it's a really weird, undefined role. And luckily, I'm in a book club, and we're going to be discussing this then on Wednesday. But I would recommend the book, even though I don't know what the ending is.
Oh, I'm Robin Proud. She, her, hers. And yes, Clara and the Sun has a lot to say about faith, which kind of surprised me. I thought it was a wonderful book. I have given a couple talks if people wanted to look them up. They're on the site. One was on Mary Shelley, Frankenstein and the Risks of Science, and Mary Shelley was a Unitarian. I related that a bit more to DNA splicing and cloning and things like that. And the other one was called Out of This World You Use in Science Fiction. So Gene Roddenberry of Star Trek and Rod Serling of Twilight Zone, who are both Unitarians, both wanted to do straightforward dramas, and they could not put on dramas with interracial cast or dramas about the issues they wanted to, so they had to stick them into sci-fi context. And science fiction in general was early to look at ecological concerns, early to look at gender concerns, and a lot of other things, because once you say, well, everything's up for grabs, we're creating a new type of world, it's going to include questioning everything. So both of those are out there somewhere. Thanks.
He gets nervous when I come up. I'm Reverend Denise Colley, she, her. I'm Reverend Matt's partner. And nice job. There are two things this made me think of. Last night, we stayed at a hotel because Reverend Matt and I are giving the ask at the installation of Team Kelly at First Unitarian Madison. They're being installed today as the official ministry team, which I think is just the coolest, and I'm so excited for them. And we were like, oh my gosh, we have all these things to do. We should stay at a hotel. And so I found a hotel, and it was really complicated because of graduation and this and that. And so we stayed in Verona to try to be further out and blah, blah, blah. And I went to put the address in, and it told me it didn't exist. And I was like, I know it exists, but I paid for it, so, it's out there. So we've all had that experience with the artificial intelligence of GPS. And then And then the other thing is that Reverend Matt got me the greatest Christmas present this year. He got me a smart thermostat. And I love this thing. But ours is supposed to be learning us, And it will get it wrong. And I have to say, it doesn't understand menopausal women.
Thank you. I'm not even sure how to follow that. I'm John Wonderland, he, him. I'm also a software programmer, and I just wanted to give a little bit of my perspective on AI for the people who are very worried about it. In general, I don't see us being anywhere close to the Terminator, the T-2000. As of right now, all we have to do is flip a light switch to kill the power, and they're toast. No self-contained power units in robots yet. On the other hand, the military applications, as you can see in Ukraine right now, are you know, Ukraine is doing an amazing job of holding Russia off, and a lot of it has to do with artificial intelligence type things like the drones that they're using and a lot of other things. So a military application is a concern. So then the only other thing I wanted to say is that computers in general don't have the benefit or the problems of millions of years of evolution. They're not trying to compete with each other. They're only going to bring what humans provide. So I'm actually fairly hopeful for the future of AI. Also, one other quick note: I have a Tesla, and I've got the full self-driving program, and I've had it for 4 years, and it's gotten about this much better in 4 years. So it's, in spite of what Elon Musk says, there's not going to be cars driving around anytime soon.
Hi, I'm Dirk Herr-Hoyman. Haven't been up here for a while, but I see a lot of familiar faces, although not Matt's, Reverend Matt's. Good to see you here, though. Okay, I wasn't going to say anything, but I got a computer science background. I've got a master's in computer science, and like 35 years ago, actually maybe 36, 37, I took a course in artificial intelligence. Artificial intelligence is like a buzzword to me in my background, and I see it go up, you see it go down. There's kind of the hype around it, and every few years it sort of comes up again. I haven't actually seen the techniques that I might call artificial intelligence really come to fruition, although some of the things that maybe are work like voice recognition is one of those things. Although somebody said, I think it was Andy, it's got to be narrow. And so if you got an accent, you know, stuff like that. So it's kind of not lived up to the hype. But, you know, when I think about the term artificial intelligence, I have to admit, what do you mean artificial? It's either intelligence or it isn't, you know, and could it be in humans or, like, how about nature, right? We think nature and we want to follow that. There are a lot of things that express themselves that could be considered. So I don't know. But I do think I've heard a tone of undercurrent of not quite being comfortable with technology or where we're going and all that. And I think that's actually spot on, and shouldn't forget about it. And how that relates to you, Yuz, and Sunya's wanting to bring, you know, it's kind of like not forgetting why and not forgetting the values and all that. But I have to confess again, I think the term artificial intelligence is almost like an oxymoron, because, you know, it's either real or it isn't. So there we go. Thanks.
Did anyone else want to speak? Anyone online? Nope. Okay. Hi, my name is Sonia. I drive a Toyota Corolla 1999, no frills, but I also use Jasper AI as my therapist. Very, very, very engaging. So thank you for all the comments. A wide range of concerns, topics, advantages, and disadvantages were addressed. So I appreciate your participation in this very needed service. So now we will move on to our offering, and Amber will be playing other side of the galaxy. This is our offering today will be offered to the Catalyst Project, a small community of up to 3 single moms and their young children who have experienced homelessness. Catalyst offers collaborative problem solving, trauma-informed mentoring, and client-specific therapeutic intervention. The Catalyst Project was founded on the belief that the wisdom of those grossly mistreated by our society, its discriminatory systems, is essential to creating a society that serves all of its people. So, other side of the galaxy. Thank you, Amber. That was beautiful. That actually took me to a different universe. That was great. So our next reading, the author of our next reading is Jasper AI, and Jasper has read about 10% of the World Wide Web. So to give justice to this, Ron Fry.
Little did I realize that both of my readings today, the one I did earlier and the one now, were by Jasper. So if it starts to feel like the computer is taking over you, start by smiling more. The world is a happier place when everyone is smiling. Make a resolution to be more understanding and less judgmental of others. Spread the message of peace through your words and actions. Support peace-promoting organizations and causes. Connect with others who share your passion for peace and work together to build a more peaceful world. Stay positive and focused on the good in others rather than getting caught up in negativity. Work towards building relationships with all people, regardless of differences or disagreements. Channel your frustration into productive activities that can help make the world a better place. Refuse to get caught up in petty arguments and conflicts, and focus instead on what really matters. Remember that every small act of peace adds up to help create a more peaceful world for everyone.
Okay. Our closing music is number 288, All Our Architects in the Bluish Gray Hymnal. That should be under your seat. At this time, we will stop the recording.